Well, hello, Haunters. Coming up on the show, Los Angeles and France are adding new mandates. Disney's opening a new campus. Eastern State Penitentiary announces Halloween nights. Yomiuri Land premieres Pokemon Hunt. And Universal Osaka's Demon Slayer partnership. All this and more coming up on today's show. While this show is focused on theme park news in general, if you want haunt-specific programming, check back in our feeds every Tuesday and Thursday. Here we go.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to Green Tag Theme Park in 30. Here's the beginning of the show. Great. Now we're moving on. My name's Scott. I'm with Scott Swenson Creative Development. I'm here with co-host Philip Hernandez from Gantam Lighting. Hey, Philip.
Hello, Scott.
Great. Now we're diving in. We're going straight in. I'm keeping that beginning short because we got a lot to talk about today. So let's go straight into what's going on in LA. Because, you know, being here in Florida, this is sort of like the opposite side of the world for me.
I know.
Not just on the opposite side of the country, but kind of the opposite side of the morality barometer or the safety barometer, or I don't know, it's just a whole different world. But apparently, due to increase in hospitalizations of unvaccinated individuals, Los Angeles County is set to reinstate mask mandates on Sunday, July 18th. So what's going on?
Yeah. So basically, in the LA County and in a few of the cities like surrounding LA County, masks are coming back, and they are coming back technically Saturday at midnight, which is, so basically it's a real thing. And Universal Studios Hollywood has already announced that this weekend they're already instituting a mask policy for any place indoors. So anybody indoors, regardless of their vaccination status, in any indoors at all, will need to be wearing masks from Saturday at midnight on, kind of until question mark, until they see how it's going. And they're going to hold off on any greater restrictions until they see if just putting the mask mandate on will lower the vaccination or the amount of hospitalizations that they're getting. So that's kind of where we are. So it's already, but basically it's already bled into attractions and everything else. It's really funny because I was at an event last night, and the event last night was like, okay, you don't have to wear your mask right now. But like, if you come to like tomorrow's thing, you're going to have to. And everybody was like, okay. And then there's one guy who like worked at Subway and one guy who works at Ralph's. And like the guy who worked at Ralph's was like, he's like, yeah, basically half my shift like goes over until one. And so my boss is like, you can keep your mask off until 11:59. And then at midnight to like 2 a.m. for the last 2 hours, you got to put your mask on. And it was just like one of those things where we're like, okay.
Well, I hope the virus can tell time. That'll be helpful.
Yeah. Like I was like, yeah, okay, good. Just so it knows when it's time. So, and there's no, the interesting mix of it is it's just masks indoors and there's no social distancing component. You know, so at the event I was at last night, they didn't have to move tables or do anything like that or move queues, but it was all like preparing people for if they come tomorrow, just so they're aware. And it was already funny because we're already back to what we talked about because those frontline employees that I was talking to, they were like, we're so happy to have to tell all of the disgruntled customers again that we can't serve them unless they have a mask on. They were just like, oh, joy. I forgot that was my favorite part of my job. Not.
Well, it's interesting because I'm all for, I've been overly cautious throughout this entire pandemic, and I continue to be cautious. In certain places, I do still wear masks, even though I am fully vaccinated. Here's my issue. To me, this sounds sort of like hosing down the whole neighborhood when somebody's doghouse is on fire. Because, you know, we've said over and over again, and not just we, because who are we? You know, we're just a couple of theme park dorks. But people who know what they're talking about have said over and over again that if you are vaccinated, it does not only protect you, but also protects you against the Delta variant. There's been, you know, multiple ways. To me, this sounds very simply like nobody wants to have people have to prove vaccination. So instead of having to go down that slippery slope, which is happening around the world, they're just going to say, okay, everybody mask again. To me, that sounds ignorant. What am I missing?
I think that's pretty much on the nose. Like, I think that a better solution, this is sort of like a big stick, right? Like, we're like, we can't scalpel this, so we're just going to hit it with a broader policy thing. And the thing is, now, so this is tangled, right? Because I do agree that I think a better policy would be, you know, what Paris is doing, which is our next news item.
You know, yeah,
that's a little bit of a better policy because it's, I think, more targeted. But I will, but like, two things is that, you know, the Delta variant, like, it's about 80%. So the 80 versus 90%, 96% or whatever. So it is, the vaccines are less effective against the Delta, and we're not sure how transmissible a vaccinated individual is with the Delta yet. So, you know, if the Delta is 10 times as contagious, and if you were previously only like 1% contagious, if you were vaccinated, I'm just doing terrible math, don't listen to me. But like, I'm just saying, like, it is still possible that that vaccinated individuals are a threat. We just don't know how much. That being said, though, nobody that is dying or being hospitalized, you know, 99% of those cases they mentioned in California that prompted this, 99% of them are unvaccinated people. So it really is a problem for
and that's probably with a status with a variant within those numbers of up to 2%. So, you know, we don't even know that. We do not know. It's everybody sticking their head in the sand, not their hand in their head. That's a completely different thing. Sticking their head in the sand about, I don't even know how to do that. But sticking their head in the sand about trying to require people to be vaccinated, or at least require people to carry proof of their vaccination status. Yeah. You know,
I would say maybe it's too political of a topic. And so they're like, you know, we did masks before. Let's just do that again. Like, that seemed to work. And maybe they're like, given the choices between something that's too political and something that we know can work.
But they don't know it can work. That's the issue. What they know can work, they're too politically afraid to do.
Oh, yeah.
That's the frustration.
Because without the so you're saying that, and I did think about that, without the social distancing component, if you're just wearing masks, like, is it going to do anything? Right. Especially with the Delta variant being more contagious, like, maybe it doesn't matter.
And the fact that even if people do wear masks, how many times are they touching them? How many times are they lowering them below their nose? We've all seen it.
Yeah,
we've all seen it. And even if you're lower below your nose, just to answer your phone, which always boggles my mind, and then put it back up. Okay, well, you've already spread. You're already a spreading situation. So, I mean, to me, it sounds like they're just afraid or don't know how to approach the situation in a way that they were saying a few weeks ago was the solution. And now they're saying, oh, no, it's masks. Well, that seems silly. Now, keep in mind, too, I'm also in Florida where our governor is a complete... He has a very different view on the scenario than I do, because he is not allowing anybody to request vaccination status. He is not allowing anybody. He's a long time ago. He signed a bill that said no city in Florida can mandate masks.
Yeah.
You know, that's, he said only the state can do that. So he's kind of a whack job on the other end. But I'm a little concerned that, you know, this is an action that looks good, but really doesn't do much. And I think it's just so that they don't have to really tackle the real problem or more accurately, the real solution.
Yeah. Well, let's give a little bit of context on Paris, since we mentioned that. You know, France is, the minister basically is requiring a vaccine passport for leisure and culture gatherings of more than 50 people, which includes Disneyland Paris and the other attractions and theme parks. And so they have all put out statements about how, you know, just so that you know, they're going to be checking for this. And basically, it's pretty simple. It's a little passport thing that is available in either physical or digital. And it has kind of three prongs to it. One is that the person is fully vaccinated. So that's option A. Option B is that before they go, you can get a negative test within 48 hours and go. And then option C is that if you had and recovered from COVID and you have a positive antigen test, then you can submit that. So it has the three common options we talked about. Mm-hmm. And so basically you just get this digital pass or this paper or digital, whatever you prefer. And then that lets you go into the attractions there. So you'll have to show that, it looks like, at the gate when you arrive. So you'll book your tickets and do that normally. And then just in order to enter, and, you know, instead of taking your temperature, you're just checking to see if you have this thing. Seems pretty simple, huh?
Makes total sense to me. But didn't you say that the moment this was announced, there was a huge like uptick in?
Oh, yeah, they were all. Yeah. So two things. The moment this was announced, of course, there was the tourism people in Paris. There was a tourism group. I'm not sure what percentage of you know, but basically there was outcries from the tourism department when they put this out there, saying how this was going to kill demand for tourism. And yet Paris was having was kind of lagging behind, you know, the same like we are. They had a little bit of excess vaccine and not enough demand to fill it. And as soon as this announcement was made up, they had like a million people register the day that it was. Now they have like a wait again for to get the vaccine, because it's like you know, a big enough carrot, it looks like, for everyone to encourage.
Well, and you know, we've been talking about it, and I've seen it here in Florida too. I'm assuming you're seeing it out in California as well. But the attendance at theme parks is through the flipping roof right now.
It's insane.
And you know, unfortunately the staffing is still a challenge, but the attendance is there. So to have tourism groups be concerned about it, again, you're not looking at the facts. You're not looking at what's really happening. And, you know, I have my, and I'm covering it so you can't read any of those numbers and, you know, see anything about me, but I have my vaccination card, and I don't carry the hard copy of it, but I do carry a scan of it in my phone. So if asked, because occasionally I am by clients, you know, if asked what my vaccination status is, I'm more than happy to show it to them. But I you know, this is not a, I personally don't view this as a invasion of privacy. It is just showing that I have, this is my status, you know? So if I don't have that, yes, I will throw on a mask and I will socially distance. But again, it goes back to, can we find a way to make this work without it becoming this big political quagmire, you know? But again, my feeling is keep it out of the hands of the government then.
Yeah. I do think that the attractions, going back to our story from last week, remember about, that petition that IAPA made for international travel, that they essentially were advocating for something very similar to what France has suggested, you know, with the, basically they're like, it almost follows the same three tier thing where there's three options.
Again, it ain't brain surgery. You know, I mean, you can either be vaccinated, have antigens against because you've survived the virus, or you have a negative test.
Yeah. And that's even, I feel like attractions should want something like that. You know, I'm really puzzling as to why that groups are upset about it there, because it's really, it doesn't mean, you know, just get a negative test if you're not vaccinated. You know, it still allows you to do the thing as long as you, it basically is like, as long as you don't have COVID, you can go to the theme parks. And I'm like, what?
Well, it's just like the cruise ship industry. You know, that's a big deal, of course, here in Florida because of, again, a statement that the governor, well, not just a statement, a law that the governor has put into place. But there's one cruise line that has basically said, we will not have ships that are not filled with people who are not 100% vaccinated. So in other words, if you want to sail on those ships, you have to be vaccinated, period. If you want to sail on them or work on them, you have to be vaccinated. Done. That's it. There is no ifs, ands, buts. And what's going to happen is they're already suing the state of Florida. But they said, we will not, we'll go somewhere else. We won't sail out of Florida. So to me, that's going to really hurt the tourism industry, at least here in Florida. The nice thing about cruise ships is they can go from wherever port they want to go from. They can still, you know, pay other fees. And quite honestly, again, based on the facts that people want to get out and do stuff, they're still going to be full. So it's just, it just means there's a lot of port charges that aren't getting collected here in Florida. So,
well, I don't know, guys. Speaking of Florida, a transition. There's one more big news story before we get into the openings that we want to go over, and that is Disney Parks Experiences and Products is developing a new Central Florida campus. So essentially, what I understand from this is that Disney is opening up a new campus, kind of in downtown or like Central Florida, not in like the, or it's in the Lake Nona community in Orlando. And initially it's going to be home to 2,000 cast members. But the thing that I saw in this that kind of like jumped out at me was that they are moving most of those roles from SoCal. So like, if you are not directly working on Disneyland or Disneyland Resort in some capacity, then you're moving over to this new campus in Central Florida. Very interesting. I have so many questions about this, you know, like, and the big thing that I'm wondering is in the middle of the staffing shortage, why are they moving them over right now, you know, in the middle of a staffing shortage where they could potentially lose a lot of really experienced people that are going to be hard to replace?
Well, but are they moving them to where they need them? Is the staffing challenge greater in Florida than it is in California? And certainly from a theme park standpoint, you know, they've got more parks in Florida. You know, they've got two in California and they've got, what, five? Including water parks?
Do you need to be in Orlando to do work on Orlando parks?
Does it save the money? I don't know. I'm, you know, you asked the question, why would you do it? Why would you do it during a staffing shortage? But I think that the people you're talking about aren't the problem staffers. They're not selling, they're not popcorn salesmen. They're, you know, Imagineers and operations people. So I don't really think that the staffing shortage is going to have anything to do with it. Unless, like so many theme parks are wont to do, when you have a staffing shortage and you have a huge pop of guests attending your park, you pull everyone out of the offices to go and work in the park. It happens, and it happens on a regular basis. And it happens even in the big boys with Disney and Universal, because I've seen it. I've seen the vice president of entertainment out with a broom and bucket helping direct guests because, again, staffing gets low. So that would be the only connection I could see to staffing, to moving them to Orlando, because that way they're there when they need them.
Yeah, but they have staffing shortages at Disneyland, too.
Right. But so, like I said, if you've got two parks versus five parks and the staff for Magic Kingdom at Walt Disney World is larger than the staff of Disneyland in California, because it's a larger footprint.
Yeah. The move is going to take place over 18 months. So,
yeah, like
that's basically almost the entire overlap with the 50th, you know, anniversary,
right,
that they're doing. Very nearly, you know, so again, I guess, you know,
done. 50th is buttoned up.
Yeah.
You know, 50th is already done from those people's standpoint.
I think looking forward, the only other thing I can see is clearly just that they're consolidating, you know, and yep, it's cheaper in Florida, I'm sure. And the only other thing I can think is that maybe they are, you know, we've talked kind of like ad nauseum about how the theme park center of the world, you know, is right now, it is Orlando, but it is moving to be in China, and the pandemic is an accelerant. So, you know, that was supposed to happen by 2024, 2025. So the only thing I could think of is that maybe they're trying to consolidate there, maybe potentially to work on projects in China, but, you know, have a base of development there, or to try and, you know, push extra build, you know, in Orlando for sure. Right now. I don't know.
Sure.
I don't know. But well, clearly, I mean, it's a consolidation move.
It takes me back to when I was working for Busch Entertainment Corporation, which is now SeaWorld Parks and Entertainment. For many, 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 many years, corporate offices were in St. Louis, where they didn't have a park. And the decision was made to move it to Orlando, which was at least in Florida, where they had multiple parks. So I think it's just, you know, kind of consolidating to where they currently have space. And you're right. I'm pretty sure that land is going to be significantly cheaper in Florida than it is in California.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. All right. Well, let's dive into some new openings. We got a little bit of time left here. I think the first one, and this goes to our Halloween friends, you know, all our Halloween friend listeners out there, Eastern State Penitentiary has announced a reimagining of their annual Halloween celebration, creating Halloween Nights. This sounds a lot more like a theme park experience than it did like an independent haunt with multiple scares. And it's interesting because I was up in Philadelphia not too long ago, and I've known Brett Bertolino from Eastern State for a very long time, and he gave me a tour, and I said, so what's coming up? And he was very, very closed-mouthed about it, but he did say it is going to it's going to appeal to a much broader spectrum of guests, which I think is interesting based on, you know, what they're throwing out there. It looks like the event will feature two haunts, four immersive experiences advertised as quote unquote not scary, two interactive performances, four themed bars and lounges, and three opportunities to explore the cell blocks, including new narration by Steve Buscemi. So it is spot on, or at least not spot on, but significantly closer to the museum's overall mission statement, which I think is great. And it also goes to what we've been talking about for the last several weeks. It tags a lot more into retailtainment or the themed bar experience. So I'm sure there are going to be people who don't care for this simply because it is a change, and it's changing out, you know, an incredibly well-known independent haunted attraction, and it's going to make it something different. I don't know. What do you think, Philip?
You know, I don't... I think the concept sounds brilliant, and I agree that it's much closer to their mission statement. You know, it was always a stretch, as you know, Scott, having been on the side that is arguing to the board that are asking the tough questions about how this relates to what you're doing. It was always kind of a stretch, you know, and it was always really a little bit of a, like, it's a fundraiser, you know, kind of a, you know, that's been their banner the whole time. I think this is closer to being the actual mission statement. I just wonder, I'm so curious, just as a curious thing, I'm not ranting, I'm just curious as to what the competitive mix that they were looking at is, you know, because I don't know what else there is in that market. You know, I don't know what they're looking at in terms of where we are in the competitive thing, because it kind of looks like right now they've gone from competing as the best at scary to, I guess, like the best at Halloween ? Or it's so broad that my question is, are you losing some of your competitive advantage by targeting everything? And I don't know the answer.
Well, I don't either. I don't know a ton about the market. I do know a little bit about the market because I do some work up there. I would say that what they're looking at is what other spaces are doing, whether that be museums or small theme parks or zoos or whatever. And they're looking, going, oh my gosh, these people are making a ton of money by targeting a family audience, because there's a lot more people who fall into that category. And they're not abandoning their old fans, clearly, because there are, you know, still two featured haunts, which, you know, have always been top notch, and I would assume would continue to be top notch. So they still got that. But they're shooting where the ducks are flying, is what it boils down to. They're looking at their competitive market and going, you know what, this family friendly thing, or this party thing, is significantly more popular than it used to be. And I'm discovering that with my clients as well, is that the family friendly haunt events are doing quite well. You know, they're not trying to be everything to everyone. They're trying to be something that a much broader demographic will enjoy. Which doesn't mean that there isn't still a place for those terrifying, wretched haunted attractions. I love those. But I think that from a dollars and cents standpoint, if they're looking at the industry the same way I've kind of seen it recently, the old guard of Halloween enthusiasts are starting to die out. And there is a strong push right now to train the next generation to be those Halloweenophiles. And the way they're doing it is by creating more family-friendly events, that families feel comfortable to bring their children younger and younger so that as they grow up, they like the creepy and then eventually will like the scary. That's my guess.
Yeah. Well, we'll just have to see. It's a big pivot, and it is, it's a big pivot, and we'll just have to see. We don't know enough about it to really say much. I don't, at least. The only thing, a few notes I will note is that the fans are like not happy on their social, and some of the way they're handling the fans on the social is not. That's a different show about social media tactics, but some of them are not great. Need a little bit more training in how to answer those guests. And the only other thing is that it's a shame that they weren't able to work the from the creators of Terror Behind the Wall thing like into the logo or somehow, because there's so much money that is still that Terror Behind the Walls, you know, that logo, that icon still holds so much money. Because it's 20, 30 years of like having the money behind it. I kind of wish they had incorporated that into the logo. You know, like you see it all the time from the creators of, or just kind of like put it in the corner. Like, you know, we brought you this thing.
They're rebranding. So you have
even to- if they're rebranding it, the everybody in that area is aware of the. It's just like the new phone from Apple. Or, you know, Google made the Pixel, the Pixel by Google. If Apple made an autonomous car, you know, that drives itself 3.0 from Apple.
Well, yes, but at the same time,
it's a car, it's not a phone.
I saw this in TV branding. The same production company that did Mighty Morphin Power Rangers did the all-new Captain Kangaroo. They actually had to form a separate production company because people wouldn't accept a family-friendly, fluffy children's show from Saban, which was the Power Rangers producers. So they had to form a secondary company or a DBA company in order to get people to follow along. So radical brand change, you cannot say, you know, here's a family-friendly event brought to you by the people who brought you Terror Behind the Walls.
Yeah. I mean, they do say that everywhere in the press release. They just don't have it in the logo.
Right. And they can't avoid it in the press release because, again, you know.
It's easier to say, yeah. Yeah.
That's what people know from Eastern State. So,
well, so our next opening is from Japan. And it's from our old friend, let me see if I can pronounce it right. Yomiuri Lando. Okay. And it's basically it's called Pokemon Wonder, but basically you get 90 minutes to hunt for as many wild Pokemon as you can. And there are 50 different kinds in total to be found across the two different trails. And it's basically that sounds a little bit cheesy, a little bit like, oh, isn't that like Pokemon Go or whatever? Okay. Mm-hmm. So here's the thing though. It's like an adventure trail in this like wild adventure park, but the team has made real like Pokemon out of natural things like sticks and stuff. And some out of like little carvings, and they've just hidden them with small scale effects, like small scale, triggered fog machines and just little small scale things. And they've hidden them in this trail. So it's just so these things that is, it's so low tech and it is just also, but so cute. And so it is already wildly popular. People are like, oh my God. And I'm like, wow, I would also be excited to do this. You know, if you were like walk around this nature trail and it's like hidden Mickeys, but it's like hidden Pokemon, like go look for this hidden Pokemon thing. And it's a very cute idea, very low tech, very, kind of like anybody could do this that with different IPs or different things, just a cute idea.
Yeah. The idea of hidden Mickeys or the idea of creating those unintentional scavenger hunts or those non-directed scavenger hunts. There's a lot of brands that have been doing it. I know Gaylord, all the Gaylord resorts have done them for a while. Obviously Hidden Mickey, you know, it's become vernacular within the theme park industry. It's no longer a hidden scavenger hunt. It's now Hidden Mickeys. And with the popularity of Pokemon there, I could just imagine how much fun this would be. It kind of goes back to, and when we first talked about doing this on the show, I mentioned, isn't this kind of like the trolls thing which again is another, it just depends on what your IP devotion is towards.
Yeah.
Because I think with Pokemon, it's perfect and it's going to be an awful lot of fun there.
And speaking of IP devotion, one of the last story I think we're going to get to that I want to bring in is also in Japan, and it's Universal Studios in Osaka is debuting a new attraction called Demon Slayer Kimetsu no Yabaya XR ride. And so basically it's a roller coaster with a little bit of a VR and a little bit of a voice character overlay. So it's a mixed of a little bit VR and a little bit of actual character overlay. And it's all themed for Demon Slayer. Okay, so these, if you're taking these two things together, I love it. I love that this random theme park is doing like a Pokemon license to do like an adventure trail. I like that. And I like that Universal, being such a large brand, is so culturally savvy that they are doing a temporary VR skin. It's from September to February. So they're basically doing a temporary VR skin of one of the most popular anime brands right now. Like the Demon Slayer movie is one of the most popular movies in Japan right now. And the IP is, that is so smart. Like it is so smart for the local team, especially Universal team, to say, we're going to create a ride that works with this anime because it's so popular right now. And we're going to I don't know. I love it because I think they jumped on this so quick, and that's what's going to make this so great, is that first of all, it's also themed. Like there's a train in the anime, because I've watched the anime. Of course, I like the anime and I watch it, so I would go on this. And there's it's themed after something that's actually in the anime. So it's not like they're just, so it's like you could ride the train from the movie and from the anime, and then you hear the stuff going on in it, and the voice actors are coming in to do special voice acting for it. And the movie just premiered a few months ago, so like it. I just think this is a brilliant partnership with an IP. So,
well, and the thing that I love about it is I think this is the next concept of the seasonal event. Obviously we've had seasonal events that have kept theme parks going, quite honestly, or increased visitation, either doubling or tripling it in some cases, because they would give people a new reason to go. And so now that same mentality has kicked over into existing attractions with overlays. So instead of doing a shoulder season event, they're doing a shoulder season overlay on a popular coaster, which I think is brilliant. And I'm really glad to see that people are starting to move in that direction, because I think it's super smart to reutilize your existing assets with a new overlay or a new IP that is short term. And hopefully this will be very successful for them, and it'll continue to be part of the business model moving forward. Well, that is our show for this week. Thank you guys all so much for listening. Please share with everybody, greentaggedshow.com. Please join us. Please like us. Please make comments. Because again, the more we grow, the more we can share the information that we have, and the more that you share with us, the better we get at it. So on behalf of Philip Hernandez from Gantam Lighting, I'm Scott Swenson from Scott Swenson Creative Development, saying see you next week.
This is a Haunted Attraction Network production.